welcome. Thank you for taking the time to come up and share with us. This workshop is kind of unique. I there's two of us here, obviously. This is Jessica Thielen. She's a researcher and also a co-author of the book Saving the Saved. And she helps me with these presentations. And the game plan today is going to be real simple. What we're going to do is we're going to look at a very, very popular model of change and how that model is executed in the church. What's good about it? What's not so good about it? Then we're going to look at another model which isn't used as much in the church and really should be, because you get better results from the use of that particular model in regard to change. So it's we're not going to discuss, and we just don't have the time. I mean, if you want to call me, I'll talk to you on the phone for an hour, but whatever. But we don't have the time to discuss all the kinds of change models out there and all the kinds of things that are going on and all the things that what kinds of changes work and what kinds of changes don't work and all that kind of thing. And we're not going to judge anybody or any church or any organization. I'm not here to talk about the change. I'm here to talk about the process of change, because without the process, there is no change, no matter what the change is. It may work for a while, but eventually it'll crumble or there'll be issues with it. So it's not what to change, but how to make the change work. That's what we're all about, okay? So let me begin by just saying that you are probably more aware than I am, even though I'm pretty well aware as an author and a teacher, basically, the kinds of things that are going on out there for change and change models. There's an industry out there right now that you know. It's called the leadership industry. They're about $70 billion in growth. And pastors from churches, Christian education departments, evangelism departments all over the United States go to these conferences. And they're different places, sponsored some by mega churches, some by just organizations that believe that this is an important thing to do. They say your church needs to change. That's the message at the conference. But the other part of that message is that you need to be the change agent. And somehow you need to either identify leadership or you have to find leadership in yourself that will be able to make these changes work. And as you know, change is very uncomfortable. So these leadership conferences get everybody real excited. I've met some pastors who have come back from these, and my son's a pastor of a large church, and they have people involved as well. And what I'm learning about this is that these conferences get people excited. They get them in this longing idea of, you know, I got to change something. Something's got to be different at my church. And they come back from these conferences ready to implement the changes and get them going. So the models are, most of the models for this are based on change, are based on psychological factors, sociological factors, something similar to the small group type activities that go on in churches, and business practices. So no consideration is given in these kind of models for unity, church unity, or preserving a process of any kind, or any kind of sound adult education. You'll find out as we go along and see the difference. These are keys to making lasting change. The key of unity, the key of process, and the key of sound adult education. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk about a version of popular industry model, and then I'm going to go on to another model that I would like for you to consider as something that can be very helpful to you wherever you're ministering or whatever position you have. Let's begin with what I call casting the vision. Okay, the casting the vision model is a model that was originally designed in industry. I know, because I've worked in industry as well. So that model we've used in industry starts with a vision, and let's begin with what I call that model and go to a pastor who decides to identify a dream or a vision. Let's say a pastor decides to go to one of these conferences And he gets there and he gets all excited about what he hears, and he says, you know, that's just what our community needs. And I need to bring this back, and we need to implement this in the church as soon as possible. And that kind of thing. So the vision is there. The pastor comes back with this idea. He begins immediately to educate himself, because this is what they teach you. Here's the books. Here's the resources. Oh, by the way, do you have this video? Here's the video. You want to pass this around your staff and get everybody really in on this so that you can make this happen. So he educates himself. He watches all the videos. He does all the organization and does whatever he has to do. The next thing that he has to be aware of is it's kind of a top-down model. Now, a lot of people don't realize that that's what it is, but it's a top-down model. And that simply means that you start at the top and you move toward the congregation with what it is you're trying to do. And sometimes it's with the staff. How do they do that? It's mostly on the old 80-20 rule concept. The idea is get those 20% of the people in the congregation, you know, the deacons, the elders, the boards, the people who really like what I do here, who shake my hand on Sunday morning and tell me that was a good sermon, or whatever the situation, get those people helping me put this together. And then, of course, the leaders introduce the plan into maybe small groups, or they introduce something into some kind of model that will help them understand what they're doing, but they kind of do it subtly. So let me give you an example of something that might happen here. For example, suppose the pastor goes to one of these conferences and he comes up with the idea of we need to, you know, they're right. We need to move the cross out of our sanctuary. We need to get rid of these pews. We need to revamp here. This is not working. It's not inviting. And what he's really thinking about, what's subtly in his mind, is that we need to be reaching out to the unchurched. And we don't want them coming in, seeing this, and being frightened. Especially the red cover all over the cross. You know, whatever the situation may be. And so he's learned this. And he feels that this is important, and he has to do something about it. So what happens in this model is the subtle indoctrination process begins. And the way it works is he maybe joins forces with a national organization someplace, some organization that agrees with this model or believes that this is the kind of change that's necessary. And what happens is he goes for a video, and they send him resource material. They might even come into the church and do an assessment and give you an idea of what they like and what they don't like, attend some of your Sunday morning services and whatever. All this is valuable. But he collects this information, and then with new vision always comes the opportunity to align staff. So now what we have is a situation that's common. You know, I'm going to go this direction, the other staff's going that direction. It's time for us to bring over here what will work and go out and find new people that can help us make this work. So that's exactly what happens. So he aligns the staff. Also, you have to do some alignment on your budget now too. Because not only are you going to hire new people and get new people involved, but you're going to have to find people that will adjust to this. And you're going to have to talk to your budget people. And you may have somebody who says, oh, we can't touch this. This is the sacred cow. And you have to tell them, I'm sorry, it doesn't work that way. In this situation, nothing is sacred. We have to move in this direction. So we have to ease in into a new calendar. Perhaps there are programs where there's money being spent. These programs may have to be canceled so that something else can be brought in that will go more in line with what we're trying to do. So you get the picture here? What's really happening? So all of these changes that are taking place, bad or good, okay, are being pushed down on people, forced by the staff on to other people, even though they're people that like it and are willing to be supportive. Now, what does that mean? Well, that means we have to prepare for the impact. And I've been in some of these meetings. They are not happy meetings. These are meetings where the staff and the senior pastors get together, and I don't know how many of you are pastors, but you know, the thing that's interesting is they get together and they talk about, well, what happens if we do what we said we were going to do? Well, here's what happens. Basically, we're going to have some angry people. We're going to have some frustrated people that don't know why we're doing what we're doing and don't understand it. And we may get reduced attendance and the Holy Grail, reduced giving, which really, you know, that could really hurt us. And then on top of all that, we have the gossip mill. That's always the neat one. People without the facts passing around what's happening, you know. And that once that starts, it's almost impossible to stop it. So that takes us to, prior to this, we have experienced the trickle down methods and all the rest of it But now we got find ourselves taking the vision to the mainstream. Remember that 80% that doesn't know what's going on yet? Okay, all right. Now that 80% is out there, all right? And prior to this, they heard little trickles. There might have been a sermon on Sunday morning about, you know, it's time that we reach out from this church, you know, and move to the streets, or we need to bring some people in, or we need to do whatever we want to do, okay? So they heard a few things. They heard that there were some groups meeting, discussing some things, kind of hearsay, kind of subtle hits that something's coming. Then comes the special announcement and the big day, the event with the celebration and all the rest of it. And the casting the vision model seals the deal with the congregation. They have a celebration. They're happy. They have people stand up and testify. They do everything that you can name to make that possible. It's still at 20%. But the 80% we talked about of the congregation are just for the first time really officially being told that next month when you show up here, it's not going to look like this. And that totally defies everything that we know in research about adult education and how adults relate to change and how changes take place. So we have some misgivings. We have a vision that's been borrowed from a conference and brought back to a church. And really not inspired by the church, more or less inspired by the conference. It's outside support systems that have subtle agendas. And anybody you bring into the church, I don't care who it is, whether it's me or anybody else, we have agendas. And you need to find out what that agenda is before you bring them in. And they can be expensive. There's also that kind of manipulation process that people feel, and it replaces the mutual trust. You have people in the congregation saying, "What? I'm the last to find out about this. I had no idea we were doing something like that." And then all of the adult changes are not even considered. The kinds of things that go on with change in adults and how they operate, when they hear change, when they work with change, when they're just being an adult, not even considered. It's just kind of pushed down. So the big assumption here is that there's a super assumption about God Himself. And what's that? Well, He's for this change, and He's going to bless it. Okay? Now remember, here's what they're thinking, what they've been taught. And you can't blame them. This is my church, and by that they mean I've invested my life in this. I've invested time and effort and money and my children and everything else. I've invested here. Okay, I believe in this pastor. I believe in this staff. You know, that kind of stuff. So that's what's going through their mind. And although the vision kind of gets borrowed from someplace else, they're still saying to themselves, more groups? Okay, we're going to talk about this more. We're going to get together. And I haven't had any input on this at all. And they keep doing more and more groups and more sessions and more sermons. And what happens? It never closes the deal. Not with those folks. So some big assumptions are made about God. And that is simply He's going to support it. And an even bigger assumption is being made about the church families. And the church families are being told this. This is what they're hearing. The change must take place because this is what the church needs. This is what's good for you. This is what's relevant. That's what they just heard. All right? So we move forward a little bit here, and I want to share with you out of a long list, a very short list, of some things that happen with adults. And I want you to think about this as we talk in your own set of circumstances. We have the very first thing we know about adults is they resist change. It does not matter what the change is. Resistance is the first response after listening. That's exactly what comes up. It's not bad. It's just who we are. And there's others like this too. Adults surrender productive leadership to fear. Adults can really be productive. They have gifts and graces and they have leadership. And if you know how to pull that out and know how to work with those people, you can get great things done in the church family. But here, we have a fearful situation because we don't know what's going to happen. So they surrender all that and they go with the fear. The examples are, go ahead and change the Bible translation that you have in the pew. go ahead and cancel one of the programs that's been done for the past 15 years in your church. You know? Long-standing things. Mess with the Sunday school curriculum. If you start doing those things, immediately you get that fear factor that comes out. Now, you have something else to look at. Adults engage in competition and conflict. Well, what do I mean there? Well, here's what the research in adult education tells us. It tells us very simply that this involves all the nuances of game playing, which means sometimes at this church, I'm the victim. Another time at this church, I'm the prosecutor or persecutor or person being persecuted, okay? Other times, I'm the rescuer. You know, the games that people play. And then there's the wordsmithing. Well, I distinctly heard that pastor say that Jesus said, he didn't use that word agape for love. He said, love really means justice and injustice. And that's what that guy said. I'm confused as to what the right word is and what the gospel really says. This is what happens. And they feel persecuted and they believe they're not being heard. And they're looking for things now. Adults bring emotions to the table. When adults do not feel like they are being heard, or whether they're respected, or someone is interested in their point of view, the resistance factor goes higher. And emotions run high when adults are asked to change something they strongly believe in. We all know that. Five here, adults have personal agendas and expectations. No group of adults work on a problem with an open mind. That's a myth. Adults, you and I are adults. When we work on something or do something, we come to it with our years of experience, with who taught us, our background, our training, and how we have been taught to make decisions. That's how we do it. And that's true of every adult in the church. And so, finally here, adults need their energies directed. And I want to say this as carefully as I can to you. Adults can be taught, they can be taught, to put their energies in the direction they should be going. Okay? And not in preventing what they don't want to happen. But you have to know how to do that. And that takes time. That's a biggie when you're working with change. All right? Now, I want to look at another model. We've looked at this, and I've tried to share with you this casting the vision model. There's some good things about it. There's some things that really concern me. I think that one of the reasons that this other model that I'm about to share with you isn't used enough in the church, and I think you'll like it, is simply because what happens is during this period of time, pastors get excited, or Christian education people get excited about what they heard, and they want to make a change, and they want it to go right now. And they'd like to get it done as soon as possible. And, you know, the popular words today, radical, you know, what else? Things like bold, inventive. There's lots of them. Revolutionary. I mean, this is the way we talk now. And what is attached to all of those? There's one word: time. Time. It's a time issue. And for most pastors, it's a time factor. They're worried about, I'm going to lose and my opportunity, whatever that may be, if I don't get this done and I don't move in that direction. So what happens is they tend to go with that. And what I'd like to share with you is this, that there is a big difference between efficiency and effectiveness. I want you to think about this. Efficiency means doing things right. A lot of churches do things right. Okay? Effectiveness means doing the right thing. So, it's entirely possible to do things right, but not necessarily be doing the right thing. So it's not the idea that the pastor came back with. It's not the concept that they'd like to change. We blame it on that. Well, that was too hard for them. They just couldn't handle it. Yeah, no. Or I just had to tell Mrs. Jones, if you can't go with this, you'll have to take your family and leave the church. I hear that from pastors. I mean, that's not it. And the thing that concerns me about this is, and we all know this, we work in the church, and we all know this. We all know that it's not our church. Christ is the head of the church. We work for Him. Okay? That's common sense. But what happens is when we get motivated with these kind of things and we don't have the training and the development to be able to move them forward, we get ourselves into trouble. And so let me share something about this adult education model. The vision is inspired with church community. It doesn't mean the pastor can't come back with an idea. It means you take that idea, and I'm going to show you how to take that idea and put it into a format that works. Okay? The strategy is based on church's unique needs. Every church has unique needs. I attended a seminar by invitation at the Crystal Cathedral back in, I think it was the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s. Dr. Robert Schuller was the pastor there. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. Most people have. He held an institute there, and there were 1,000 pastors there from all over America. And he told us, one of the things he told us, among many, was that you need to go back to your church and tell them that we need to buy property all around our church because we need more parking places. And we can't grow the church without a parking place. And we need to do that. And we need to do it now. Don't let them off the hook. Put the pressure on. I know three pastors that lost their job because of that recommendation. And churches that folded had difficulty trying to figure out how to be a big church when they were a medium-sized church going after the unchurched outside. So you have to be careful with how this is done. So unity, of course, created from the bottom up. This program with adult education is bottom up. It's not top down. And that makes the difference. Unity is developed from the bottom. All we got to do is look at Jesus and how He operated with people. And He said, this is my church. I've got the keys. Here's how it's going to work. Okay? They didn't start at the top. They started at the bottom and they built it little by little. And out of that came their leaders with their gifts and everything else involved. So, now what we have is it's based on adult research. All those things I've reviewed for you and several more are all heavily sponsored, heavily paid for, and heavily researched adult education. Very, very important if you're going to work with adults. And by the way, it works with youth too. Those same things are very, very relevant. They're not negatives. They're positives if you know adults. This model started in the church, and I think that's important to know. It's based on adult research. And then there's the process that establishes lasting change. This process that I'm about to share with you People don't forget about it. Come on in. They don't forget about this because it's important to them. It's important to their life. So there's a process that establishes lasting change. Now, three things I just want to mention to you here. Adult education models have not been used in the church very much, even though it was developed in the church, for one simple reason. We don't have the time. We don't want to take the time. I'm telling you that in the day and age in which we live, we need to take the time with our folks. We need to help our folks and take the time. Thank you. So that's very important. Now, this model started in the church, like I said, and it expanded into industry. The Cast Your Vision model started in industry. I know, I was there. And it developed into the church. And so what we want to do is we want to find something where there has some academic background, where it has some research solid behind it, and has worked across the country and works in churches. So the adult education model has many advantages, and it leads to a solid process, and you're going to like that part, because that's the part that keeps them going, keeps the engine running. So, four pillars, awareness, principles, whatever you want to call them. There are others, but these are big. Mutual trust, shared leadership, shared decision making, and shared evaluation. Now, these awareness principles, because this model was developed in the church, came right out of Old and New Testament stories and teachings. So that helps right at the very beginning. For example, it's fine to have the prayer meeting get together and all the prayer groups in the church over the change that has to happen and get them involved. That's a great thing. We certainly need to start there. But also, it's good to know that some of these things say mutual trust. Proverbs 3, 5 through 6. In the Old Testament, trust the Lord. Lean not on your own understanding. Okay? Work together. The Holy Spirit indwells in Christians. We know that. Why not tap that resource to help us with what we want to try to get done? Trust begins with our relationship with God and with each other. Romans 12 spends a lot of time talking about that unity and the importance of that in the church. The New Testament. Paul teaches in 2 Corinthians 5:18, all about the cross. And particularly, not just the vertical relationship of the cross, our connection with God, but what? That horizontal connection. The way we relate to each other, the way we work with each other, the way we train each other, the way we get things done with each other. That's there. Paul refers to it what? A ministry of reconciliation. That's what we're talking about. So, there's other options. Like take, for example, shared leadership gifts. I hear people running all over the country trying to figure out how to discover how to build leadership in their church. You have leadership in your church. Go after it and develop it. It's there. Disciple it. These people have gifts and graces. They're helpers, they're servers, they're administrators, they're teachers, they're mercy people. They're right in your congregation. We need to identify these people. Talk to them about that. Help them to get involved with what it is that you're trying to accomplish. So all that's there. Now, what does this process look like when you put this process into practice as opposed to a casting a vision? This process takes the idea that we'll use that poor pastor we've been picking on, takes the idea of that pastor who went to the conference and came home with this great idea that he had to change something, and he knew it was good for the church, but the way he went at it was maybe where some mega church goes at it and could get away with that process, but in his church it kind of doesn't work that way. So what we're doing is this. We take that concept or that idea, that change idea, and we ask, put it into the form of a question that's answered, cannot be answered by yes or no. And I'll show you this in a minute. Also, we put a goal together, or the pastor puts that goal together, or the staff, or whoever's doing this. Just the topic and the goal. The goal has to be specific. It has to be include the changed outcomes. What do you want to see when all this is done? How's it going to work? And then there's an outline.
James, why don't you do the example?
Yeah.
Do the example of a topic and a goal so they can understand what that looks like.
Okay.
There.
All right. Let's do this. Here's something that might really help you a little bit in this process. You have a dream or a vision, and you want that to work. Let's put that into a topic. Let's say this guy who wanted to go after the unchurched, okay? How do we make community outreach a priority in our church? There's the topic, okay? The goal, simple, to have each adult class participate in two community outreach projects each year. Now, that's what the pastor would like to see done, or the staff, or whoever's doing this. Okay. Now what we do is we put multiple teams together. And yes, you can use leaders, or you can use staff people, you can use facilitators, you can use your elders, or your deacons, or your friends, or whatever, whoever's got a little bit of training, or you can also look for people who are natural leaders in that kind of ability. And what you do is you do a cross-section of your congregation. Your problem-solving teams or inquiry teams are now made up of people all across your congregation. And you give them this topic and this goal. And here's what you ask them to do. An outline. You simply say to them, the outline is a list of issues that we want to discuss. And we'll show you what the outline will be for this in just a second. But you have problem-solving teams working on something, and the reason they buy into it is this. You need their help. And you want their input. And here's the other piece to it, too. You know what you want, but it's not permanent. You're not asking them to take a six-month job to work at the church. No, you're not asking that. What you're saying was, would you be willing to help out? I need 3 sessions, 2 hours each, and at the end, you're done. You don't have to do anything else. What we want is simply for you and your team to solve a situation and to come up with an outline and discuss that outline and give us your input. That's what we want. The goal and the topic drive the outline. So it will come out where you want it to come out. And the way you assure that is that you have 3 positions that are involved with this. You have a leader, you have a recorder, and you have an observer. All volunteer in the group. They don't have to be a professional of any kind. The leader does 3 things here. Very simple. He keeps them on task, he or she, introduces the topic and the purpose. They present the goal and the outline. And they draw everyone into the discussion so that everybody gets a chance to talk. The recorder uses a board or a flip chart. And they simply put up on the board or the flip chart the things that the group does not want to forget. Now, you'll have people that will take notes, I'm sure, because people just generally do that. But at the same time, you got it up on a board someplace. So at any time during the conversation in the next half hour, somebody can say, you know, when we first started out, Joe had 2 good ideas. Oh, there they are. And they're on they're right on the sheet. And you see what they are, and it goes back to that so that you can talk about that and you can make it work. The observer charts the discussion. And the observer actually reports back to the team at the end of the half hour. And says, this is what I've observed. Now, what they do is this. They have a little chart that they use for observing. And they look for the dynamics of the group. How the people reacted. How many people participated? How many people were sitting here like this and didn't like the whole idea? And that kind of thing. Group interactions. How the group makes decisions. Now, of course, I'm giving you a broad brush of how this operates. But I'm telling you that when you do it, it starts to become exciting to the people who are involved. and they get invested in it. And they want to work with you to make that change work for you. Let's look at the next slide, which talks about that top and go I talked to you about. Look here what the group did. The pastor said, I want to do something about outreach in this church. Something's got to be done. So we put it into how do we make community outreach a priority in our church. That's about as clear as you can get it. You can't say yes or no to that. You have to talk about it. Now what about the goal? The goal is simple. The goal is provide each adult class that is within the church, have them participate in 2 community outreach projects each year. That's the way the pastor would like to see it, or the staff, or whatever. Now, what the group does with the leader, recorder, and observer, when they get together, they build this outline. And they came up with, let's discuss about how adults, what kind of attitudes adults have in our church toward evangelism and outreach. So they started a little conversation about that. And the next thing they started doing is discussing Matthew 28:19-20, which is they felt was the mission of their church anyway. That's what they should be doing. And then they went back and they came up with, well, maybe we ought to search through literature and we ought to find some things that supports and encourages participation in evangelism and outreach and get this to our adult class leaders so that they can start talking about it in class. And then finally, kind of almost a recommendation discussion, which was making evangelistic outreach kind of task force to develop those outreach projects that the pastor wants us to participate in a couple times a year. Get something out there that will really, really work. Now, when teams are done, the leaders from each of these teams, voluntary leaders, okay, with some skills, take that information, they all meet with the pastor and staff, or whoever's in charge of this process. And they sit down with them and they say, Pastor, here's our input. We spent 4 hours, 3 weeks coming up with this. And we want you to know how we have solved this problem for you, or how we feel this could take place. And so the pastor listens to their presentation, however they would like to do it. And then the pastor has that input with his staff, with his elders, with his board. And from that, they make a decision. Now, here's what you have. Because the church body has participated in that decision making, they have this feeling of, what do you call it, empowerment? We had something to say about this. Matter of fact, they're going to ask me about my ideas on designs for the left side of the choir loft or whatever it may be. So there's lots of exciting things going on with this. You know, we're moving the band over there, and that was my idea, you know. And we're putting the cross over there. That was my idea, you know, that kind of thing. So you start to get them involved in that process. Now, this is a workshop. So what I'm going to ask Jessica to do is to hand out a few things to you. And I'm going to go over them with you real quickly. And the best way I think we can do this, while she's doing that, I want to talk to you just about this. And that is that always remember that what we do in this process is it's clearly defined. The change has to be clearly defined. You can't have a change like, I would like to change, you know, everything we do Sunday morning. That's not going to work. You have to be a little more specific in that, and it's got to work for you. Or I want to put the change you are looking for, and we want to make sure we can put it into a topic goal outline, a TGO. That's important. And then I want to start with a simple problem or inquiry. Something simple that makes it work. And let's practice it. So what I'm going to do is this. I'm going to push this down. And what I want you to do is let's take our chairs. Can we make like a, just push it in the way, make a circle.
So just for us, bring your chair. Not the other chairs in the middle, it doesn't matter where they go. Yeah. I'm gonna sit here because I by the way, while she's passing that out, just go quickly around here.
Did everyone get that?
Everybody got that? Okay. Your names?
Gerald.
Geraldo. Geraldo. Your name? Matt. Okay.
Julio.
Julio?
Kevin.
Christine.
Ricky.
Christina.
Okay.
Judy.
Gwen.
Gwen? Okay. Yeah. James. Jessica. I want to be able to watch Jessica.
Do you want me to write it up here? Let's put the light on so we can
That's
see
what I was
going
to do, exactly. Yeah. I was going to put that light on so we can see the board.
Okay.
Good. All right. What you have in front of you, you take the one like this, okay, first. Mm-hmm. And what this is a where you would put a topic goal and outline, and it tells you the real things that you need to consider up there. And this one here is the one that talks about the three leadership positions, volunteer in the group, leader, recorder, observer. Okay, those three. That was one of the slides that's up there. So I gave that to you because I thought that'd be helpful to have. On the back of that is the observer's chart. And I'll show you how that works. Okay? What the observer would be doing right now. Okay? And matter of fact, what we should do is, who wants to observe the group? Watch this group do their stuff. You want to do it? You want to do it? Great. Okay, good. Okay, here's what you do.
She has one.
Oh, you got one. Yeah. I was going to say, you don't get to talk, unfortunately. But what you do get to do, it's Judy, right? Okay. So what you get to do is you write everybody's name in where you think they are in these things. Or
I mean,
make
at this
own,
point, you can just, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you don't have to fill them out completely.
Just do that.
Just do the basics, you know? Now what she's going to do is she's going to sit there and watch you. And she's going to look at what you say and how you say it. But like this little chart shows here, every time one of you talk to somebody, she's going to draw an arrow from you to the person you talk to.
Mm. Oh.
Now what that's going to do is this. If you talk a lot, and you talk a lot to the same person, at the end she's going to go, two people talked the whole time and nobody else got to say anything. She's not going to say who it is. She knows, but no one else knows. Okay? Or three of you sat here like this and disagreed with what was going on but said nothing. Now the next time we come together, that can't happen. We have to correct our process. So we correct the process as we go along, and when we start our next meeting, she helps us to remember that we can't do that anymore. Now, she may not be the observer next time. It might be, one of the other people here. So that's how it works. Now, with that, topic, goal, outline.
James, you want to get your recorder?
Yes, actually, well, we could do the recorder now. Yeah, you want to do that? Okay, how about if you be the recorder?
Okay.
All right. That way we'll get you involved here. One of the other things I want to do too is she's going to volunteer because I told her to be the recorder. You got that? Okay. All right. Now,
let's pick a topic.
Now, pick a topic. We're going to pick a topic. Okay. Why did you come here? Now, what I want you to do is I want you to give me a story about your church and how wonderful it is, because I already know that, or you wouldn't be here. So what I really want to know is I want to know, what is on your mind in just a few words about your church or your situation?
Do you specifically mean the change? What change they want to make at their church?
What change you want to make? Well, I'm going to let you put that into kind of a list up there.
Okay, I'm just going to list. So what changes, if you're a pastor, church leader, Sunday school worker, what change do you want to see happen at your work? We're going to form a list, then we're going to choose one to solve that problem here today.
Yeah.
So in a short time period.
Just throw them out. Whatever. Tell her in short
kind of
sentences you can talk.
Yes.
Go.
Chairs instead of benches.
Chairs instead of benches.
Good. Chairs instead of benches.
Okay, good.
Disinteresting and learn. Uh-huh.
Chairs. I'll put no benches.
Yeah. Okay. What else? Come on.
Participation.
Huh?
Participation for the Sunday school.
Participation
more
for Sunday school.
Yeah,
more participation.
Yeah,
that's
more
what you're after.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, similar reason. More like I want church to invest more in children ministry than
invest more in children ministry.
Okay.
You okay with that? Okay. All right. Good.
Communication.
Communication in what way? How do you want it? What do you want to do? What do you want to change?
Between leadership and everyone else.
Okay. So you want more communication, or clearer, or better, or
so all to
the above. All the above.
Yeah.
With leadership and the people. Okay.
Leaders,
all right.
To people.
That's good. Anybody else? Anybody else? Any changes? Anybody? Anything to do there? Okay. All right. That's enough.
Okay.
Now let me see. I got.
Oh, I have one more. Oh, yes.
Oh, you have one more.
Training for new leadership.
Training for new leadership.
Training for new leadership.
To implement into your.
Implement. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Who is a pastor here? Anybody? Okay.
What's your name?
You look like a pastor.
Gerald Ford.
Gerald Ford is going to be the pastor, okay? You're all working for him. You're a group of people, a cross-cut across his congregation. And Gerald needs to get a problem solved. So Gerald, it's going to be up to you. You pick one of those that you like the most, and we'll work it. Anyone, doesn't matter.
I would say the money inside of the children ministry.
Okay, so more money.
Yeah.
Is it? Let's be specific with that.
Maybe more.
How do we raise more money, or how do we transfer?
Yeah, do you want to raise it, or do you want more investment of the church budget in it, or what would you like?
Well, not particularly money, but I want them more involved and care. Like, okay, it would be nice if they could fund so we could get some training, more training for the teachers, or some kind of meeting that they could.
More funding and care for the children's ministry.
Right. Yes. Or just you're making
okay
children's ministry a priority in the church.
Yes. Mm-hmm. More,
okay.
More, like,
here we go, group. Watch
so
this.
How
pastor
would that question
okay, here we go, group. You got a topic called outline. You know what our issue is here. We're all concerned about the children's ministry. It's not getting enough funding. It's not getting enough communication and teaching and training and that kind of stuff. We got to fix this in the church, or the pastor's not going to be happy. So we got to get this done. So this is what we got to do. How would you take that and put it into the form of a question that cannot be answered yes or no? Take that idea.
How can we help?
How can we help?
They need some answers.
Okay. What else? Anything else?
How can we invest more of the church funds within the children ministry to where that we're making the children ministry priority, the children, the staff, the training, etc.
There you go. How can we make children's ministry more of a priority in our church? There. Somebody write that down. Okay.
Recorder.
Oh, you do it? Okay. Now remember, we're going to come back to you and ask about things that we say. So, all right. Okay. So now we got our topic. Okay. Now what about the goal? The goal was pretty clear from her perspective, and that was she needed more funding for teacher training, and she just needed more teachers. Did you say, or what do you need? More
mostly,
communication?
Training, and then, you know, sometimes it feels like teachers are out there on your own trying to figure out how to, instead of church up there trying to have some sort of organization to kind of bring the teachers in, you know, connect something between the teachers and also with the pastors, you know, some organization, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
Somebody tell me what that would look like as a goal.
They find some type tool, you know, to enjoy when they come to learn.
Oh, that's a good idea. No. All right. Well, hold that on to that. Let's put it into a goal. What's a goal?
Go back to being specific for the leaders.
Yeah.
Let's tackle one problem at a time.
Right.
Maybe be able to assemble children ministry team within let's say 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that sounds like a goal, like in 3 months or 6 months.
Well, it's good, like, it's good to make the goal exact.
Right.
In 3 months, we will do this. In 4 months, we'll accomplish this. You're okay with that, Brian?
Yeah.
he's fine with that. All we got to do is we got to put it into a goal statement. So,
right.
So help me put it into a goal statement. What is our end goal here?
Provide like some sort of like quarterly, I don't know, seminar or some sort of bring a new tool or something.
Okay, let's focus on that. Not worried about the money for the minute.
Oh, okay.
Okay, let's focus on that. It's obvious we're going to need money to do that. So,
oh, yeah.
So we're going to go back and hit him up for money in the budget. So let's start with that. Okay. All right, let's make
so
that our goal. Can you do that?
We want to implement quarterly training for our children's ministry staff and volunteers.
Yes, because when you are when you are in the children's ministry teaching for many years, it just feels like now like they trust you to kind of do your thing. But, you know, it's nice
to
know
to
that they're supporting you and you have that connection, you know?
Yeah,
and
we develop a program in a church where we have the Road Rangers and the missionaries and all those little kids by ages,
mm-hmm.
according to their ages and
yes.
school education.
Right.
So we have that schema in our church.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how we have.
So you train by the ages.
Program.
Yeah, that's for the
kids.
Yeah, that's good.
Developing
yeah.
a program.
Yeah, most people do it that way. It's a developmental
yes.
process. Yeah. All right. Now, what about in terms of an outline now? Now, we don't have time to come up with 3 or 4 or 5 things because we've run out of time here in a little bit. But let's go with what's one thing that we feel if we could get a solution to, that pastor would get all happy. Okay? what can we do? What's that one thing in the outline? So how would you like to discuss this? How would you like to talk about it? Think of the goal. Think of that. Now, normally you'd have a flip chart here, and that goal would be right in your face.
Yeah, so
and let me
just repeat the goal.
Yeah.
We want to have a quarterly training for children's ministry staff and volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some practical aspects to that.
Mm-hmm.
Time.
Yeah.
Who's going to organize that?
Mm-hmm.
Does it include lunch?
Okay.
And then there's also what will be in the training.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So I think we need to consider that.
Let's have a discussion on the things that need to be done to make the training possible. Okay, what things need to be done to make the training possible? That's going to be our first discussion. Now, there may be 5 more that we all would agree on and come up with, and we would write them on the board and get them. But since we're limited in time, let's just go with this one. All right, so now what is our goal and our object, our first thing to talk about?
Okay, well, the first thing to talk about is what needs to be done to make this possible.
Okay, all right. Let's have a discussion. Okay, I'll be leader for a second. And basically, what, somebody talk. You know.
Can we bring a trainer and resources?
There you go, okay. Recorder's gonna put down, bring in a trainer with resources. Okay, that has to be done. What else has to be done to make this happen?
How much is it gonna cost?
Yes, there has to be a cost factor. Told you could be a pastor.
Find a person who will coordinate, like everything.
The coordinator, yeah.
The coordinator who's going to find out who's the speaker, how much it's going
to
cost.
Okay, so we need
somebody
to coordinate this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? All right, so it's a coordination issue. What else?
We need to find a time and a date for the participant.
There you go. That's really critical in the church. The time and the date to do this, because now we have to mess with not just on your budget, Pastor, but we also got to talk to your office about who keeps the calendar for the church, you know, and we need to figure out how we can wiggle this in to the calendar. And we need to find how many teachers are going to be involved. Are we just going to do all teenagers? Are we going to do 3-year-olds first? Or what are we going to do? And we'll have to decide. So we should decide here what level needs this the most. So in your situation, what would you say it was?
Well, mine is the children is from first grader to fifth grade. So are you talking specifically like what grade?
I would say what category would we do it in? You answered the question. So she wants to do something with first through fifth grade. And she wants to make sure that somehow they're the teachers who get it first.
They're the ones who get the training and the attention and that kind of thing first, because that's where she's having her biggest issue. So that's where we're going to go. You okay with that, Pastor?
Yes.
All right. All right. Okay. So now we have this outline. We continue to talk about the outline, and we do as much as we possibly can to make this work. Now, does anybody else have any other ideas?
Well, morale was discussed. You brought up that sometimes the morale mm-hmm. is kind of low. They feel like they're doing it by themselves. Mm-hmm. Do we need to do something special? Not just have a training, but there's something that kind of gets them really motivated and it's special for them. Maybe we turn it not into just a training, but also a, you know, a volunteer appreciation luncheon and training, or expand it that way.
And have the pastor come.
Yes.
And say great things to them. Yeah, mm-hmm. That'd be good. That's a good idea. Okay, that's what we'll do. That way we can encourage them. Because that's what, that sounds like you're really after, some encouragement, some new insight, that kind of stuff, so that they don't feel like they're going home at night saying, oh my goodness, tomorrow's Sunday and I have to have all this ready.
Yes.
I understand, yeah. Anything else? Anybody else got some good ideas?
Or even a support system for teachers.
Oh. Build a support system for the teacher.
What would that look like?
Mm-hmm. Oh no, she was saying how that sometimes they felt like they are alone. So maybe if even a prayer group for a teacher or even, I don't know, two teacher prayer
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or just pastors or elders or someone's assigned to mm-hmm. each teacher. And just see what the needs are and how they can support them.
Right. It's a good idea. It's a good idea. Anybody else have any comments on that?
Good
idea. Yeah. Y'all agree that that's a pretty good idea?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, put that down for you.
I did.
Okay. Now, you see how this would go on and on and on, and we'd come up with more and more suggestions and ideas and input and all the rest. Now what's going to happen, let's say, our session for today is over. We've discussed four outlined projects, and we've got a list of things for this pastor that we think should work and could work, and we'll solve even more of it if he wants us to. We'll figure out, we'll go meet with a calendar person in the office or whatever you want us to do. We'll get all that organized, and then we'll bring it back to you organized, and then he can make the little changes or whatever is involved in that process. But now that we got all that done, we're done for this discussion. We're going to have one next week and the following week, and then maybe next week, and then we're all done. And then the leader, whoever volunteer leader for next time, they'll come, and that leader of the next time will then either bring the whole group or one or two of the group with them, and they will go sit down with the pastor. Now remember, this is a church of 300 members. And so there are going to be 20 other leaders coming with their topics and things on how to deal with that issue for the pastor. So the pastor's going to have a few-hour meeting. And he's going to have to sit and listen to this whole thing, all this work all these people have done in his congregation. And once they bring this to him and they come up with all their creative ideas and all the rest, I don't think he's going to have any problem trying to figure out a way to help the children, all the teachers in the education department. I think he's going to see that that's a real need in this church, and that people are excited about it, and they want to get something done. They want to make a change here. Okay. And by the way, this is more of the easier kind of changes that have to be done. It's not like I mentioned to you like changing the whole sanctuary, but you know, it's the kind of thing that really this process works wonders with this. I mean, you have Mrs. Jones out there who hasn't done anything but give her money and her check to the church every Sunday, and is faithful every Sunday, and she comes, and she got on this group. And when the pastor announces that next week we're having a training for the teachers and stuff like that, Mrs. Jones has a big smile on her face.
Mm-hmm. Or the people that would maybe provide lunch for the teachers and the staff, knowing that mm-hmm. they participated in this process. We need people to volunteer and cook for our teachers and volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there'll be a better one now.
You bet.
With
that. You bet. So the group can go on and on until they feel we've solved this thing. We know how to do it, and now we're going to report on it, and we're going to take it back. Now let's go ahead. Questions?
So just as far as implementing, I'm just kind of curious. So
mm-hmm.
within the church, are these like dedicated like decision making small groups? Because you know we have like fellowship groups and everything. So what group? What is the name of this group? And I mean, is it a separate entity?
I just simply call them an adult education group. And what I do is, or I give them a name. You can give them a name for your church if you want to use this all the time. You give them a name. Participation groups or something. But remember, they're disbanded. They're not like your reading group, your prayer group, they solve this problem. They get a few reports back from our observer, and they learn a few things, and then they're disbanded.
So then you're saying that, let's say a person from the church, like me, I kind of approach the main pastor, right?
Sure, sure.
So let's say I bring this subject to someone. Mm-hmm. So then that someone brings the topic to the pastor.
Right. There may be a staff person that's over education. You would take all that information there. And matter of fact, you as a group leader, or the 20 other group leaders that got all charged up with this, they would all meet with your associate pastor of education, or whoever's in charge, the coordinator of education, whoever that is. They'd make their presentation to her. She can invite the pastor. She can say, "Hey, pastor, you got to hear this," you know. Or she can say, "Give it all to me. I'll write it all down and take notes and all the rest of it. And I'll go in staff meeting and I'll report this to our whole staff as to how we did this and what we did." And I guarantee you, you'll get a response back from the professor.
It'll kind of change the culture of the church.
Yeah.
Because if they know this is how we do things, this is how we make decisions now.
Yeah.
It's not just from the top down. We have committees. It's like having a committee, mm-hmm. a short-term committee that will solve the problem. If that becomes the normal culture, the pastor or the children's ministry director can say, "We have some issues about X, Y, and Z. We need to have our committees meet for the next 2 weeks on the subject."
Yeah.
Volunteer sheets.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you're
going to
have the pastors when the going gets really tough and he's got some tough decisions that he would normally just pass off to his staff, that you guys figure that out and that kind of stuff. He'll start using groups. He'll start get out there and put me 20 groups together across the congregation, and here's my goal, my topic, my goal. Get them to solve this, you know? And it'll be interesting. And little by little, so it's tough things plus simple things.
You can put it out there, announce it, saying we're going to make a committee, so whoever's interested in that topic will show is what.
Yeah, you ask for volunteers, but you do it across the congregation. You know, you take people who normally are leaders in the church or people who are in the education department and said, "Look, we need 4 of your hours. Or we just need you to put it in a bulletin." You know, people call you, they'll sign up. You know, and that kind of stuff. It's once and done. Promise, we won't come by your home for 6 weeks after that. You know, we just want you to do this one thing for us and help us out. And they'll show up, and they'll come. And you tell them there's lunch. You know you're going to get them in, and that kind of stuff. Or there's going to be somebody to speak or something like that. Or maybe the pastor can wiggle it into his schedule somehow where he can come by and shake everybody's hand. Or something like that.
But there's multiple groups. Mm-hmm. And what's a comfortable size group? You say no more than 12?
Yes. Yeah.
So you don't want to have a chance to talk.
Yeah, yeah. You don't want to get more than 12. Now, let's go back to the observer. The observer's been sitting here watching this whole thing and not saying anything. Okay. Now, tell us some of the things about the dynamics of this group that you see. And you can't pick on me because I'm teaching.
I think it's probably because we're meeting for the first time.
Yeah.
And we're from various backgrounds.
Right.
So the conversation is really from each member to the leader,
yes.
the leader back to each members.
Correct.
So we're very new at learning this, so basically the leader plays a true leading role.
Yeah, well, that's very good. Good observation. That tells me that the next time, now, I need to get a volunteer leader, you know, because you and I have gone back and forth to a whole bunch of times, and we all know what we're doing, so it's everybody to me and me to back. Now what we do is we get another leader that nobody's thinking of as someone that could lead, and it's volunteer.
and they volunteer. They might only volunteer for the first thing on the outline. I'll lead that number one discussion, you know. But number two discussion, somebody else has to do that. I can't do two. Okay, fine. That's fine. It doesn't matter. You know, a leader's a leader.
So then you're saying next time someone else could be the recorder. Next
absolutely.
Time we meet or someone else can be the leader. Someone
absolutely.
Else can.
Yeah. Yeah, we won't take her out of the loop every time. She never gets to participate. We want to keep her in the loop so that she can participate. Yeah. Make sense?
So my another question is, so first of all, you bring the topic, you make a goal, and for that goal, you make an outline like people suggest, right?
That's right.
And you discuss, and then if you guys like gave good suggestions and you solve the problem, you just end it there?
Yeah,
you have
well, you report back to the leaders or whoever told you to do this or that you convinced to do it. They take all the input from your group. And somehow, I guarantee you, this will all filter up to the pastor. He'll get it. He'll get a four-page, you know, from somebody that will say, look at what your people said.
He'll get multiple of them, because if there's three groups solving a problem, he'll get three different lists of solutions. Correct. You could have 20 groups in your church solving a problem if it's major, or maybe you have five groups solving a problem that just, you know, needs to be
defined. How large is the church that you've had?
About 500.
About 500, boy. If I were in that church, boy, I could get tons done, you know? Okay, and how many is in your church?
Around 300 to 400.
300 to 400. These are nice churches, they're nice size.
About 75.
75, good, that's a good church, okay.
About 100.
What?
100.
About 100, good, good.
300.
About 300?
100.
Good.
300.
300?
25.
25?
Well,
2005.
Wow.
2005.
Right, because we have two locations.
Yeah, okay.
And three services.
There you go.
On Sunday.
This process would really help that church.
Yeah.
I mean, because a pastor and a staff can't do it all. There's just no way that they can do it all. Plus the fact that when they want to make changes, for them to think I've got to communicate to everybody about this, it just blows their mind. But if you get a process in place that works, and you can prove it to the pastor, I mean, they will throw they'll throw budget decisions into small groups across the congregation. I mean, it's amazing what can happen with this. And when the congregation gets good at it, it's faster than the old cast a vision idea, you know, because people are looking forward. You have people bumping into you in the church saying, yeah, can I get on the next one? You know, whatever the topic, you know, they want to do it. They want to get involved. Because it makes them feel like they're shaping the church and making it happen and serving God in their own way, you know, with their talents and their abilities. So it's really great. Yeah. Well, did that help you any?
Yeah.
One issue. I don't know if
Go ahead.
To the issue here, but talking about changes. In our church, we have the Old Testament and the New Testament people. The New Testament is leading. The elders, they're staying behind. It's like we are not supplying or ministering to them. Because the new the youth, they're leading, and the youth are the ones working. But the elders, they're staying like behind. They don't worship no more. They don't feel like they don't want to come because there is nothing for them, let's say. So we are dealing with this issue. I mean, I don't know what would be suggestions and changes. Maybe have only a youth service for them and have another service for the elderly.
So you only have 100 people in your
About 100, 120, 130 when it's full.
Well, one of the things that passed.
And we're doing bilingual, Spanish and English.
Yes.
So when the youth ministers in Spanish, everybody pretty much can sing, you follow. But when they come to English songs, all hill songs and new stuff, you know, everybody pretty much quiet because they bring in song after song after song every Sunday.
Right.
They change those songs because they are youth, they want to practice that new song. Uh-huh. So they come up with new songs every Sunday,
sure,
to the point that we are not, you know, participating in worship. And so that's a very good problem.
I mean, it's not good, but it's.
As a member of the staff of the board.
Yeah,
I bring in suggestions. Why don't we bring or create another service for the elders,
yeah,
where they can minister?
Sure.
And have another service for youth and English.
What has to happen in that situation is that you need to get some groups together in each of those congregations. And they need to discuss the music in the church, yeah, and how the music's being done in the church. Not criticize it. It's not about criticizing.
No, no,
it's coming up with solutions.
Right.
Why? How can we get this music that's being created every Sunday morning to fit with the English speaking and those who speak Spanish and whatever? How do we mix this? How do we put it together?
And have mixed groups.
You said
the elders and the younger people. Have them in the same group discussing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I brought that issue to them. And
right.
They say, look, if we do a service in Spanish and English, there will be a competition.
Yes. Yes.
Mm. I say, if it's growing or better, that's good. I like competition.
Yeah.
You know?
Adults compete. Yeah.
And they will be like, yeah, we want to minister on the English, we want to minister on the Spanish, we want to go at the early time rather than at the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to bring issues, so we have to fix this. So.
Yeah.
But it's an issue now that we need to.
You need mixed groups across those congregations, two or three of those groups across those congregations, because you're 100 people. So you need to kind of get three groups, maybe of six people, mixed from the Spanish and whatever, together, sitting together and discussing this, having a recorder, a leader, and an observer, someone that can hold you guys to the fire, you know, in terms of, well, you know, the Spanish folks here are not getting an opportunity to say their point of view. And until you come up with a real outline that you can discuss and take those conclusions to the pastors or whoever's in charge of the services.
Right.
And say, we really want you to consider this because we don't want bad things to come out of this. We don't want the wrong kind of competition to come out of this. We don't want, you know, we want each congregation to grow, but we don't want it to be to the point where we don't go there because they sing too many songs that we can't participate in. That's not going to help your worship experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So you need to do that. This is perfect for you guys.
Yeah, the other issue, I mentioned the chairs and benches. We have benches. It's a temple.
Uh-huh.
It's not a building like this, flat,
right,
you know, where
right,
you can turn it into whatever. They want the youth and other leaders, they want to change it into more modern.
Multi-purpose?
Modern, kind of, more modern, multi-purpose. TVs, plasmas, and whatever.
Sure.
While the elderly, they want their benches, and they want their curtains on the sides, and they want the
cross. I've been there. Yeah, I understand.
You know, they don't want to change. They want to keep.
That's
another issue we are.
But you know what? You know what? I'll tell you something about the elderly. The elderly love young people.
Yeah.
And if you can get them in groups with young people, and they can work with them, you'll have the elderly in there tearing out the pews. So there's ways to do this. You just know you need to have some good work together.
We're about time, James.
Yeah, yeah. If we can help you in any way, you got our information off the slide, our phone numbers and stuff like that. Give us a call. You got questions? I'd be happy to answer your questions or help you.
And we'll hang here for a little bit, too.
Yeah. And we'll hang around. But, I mean, you're welcome to call us if you want. If you have a church that you feel that this could work for you and you want to go home and talk to your pastor and say, we want to do this in our church, you know, have them come and help us, you know, or something like that. We'll do that for you. Yeah. That's part of our ministry for this one. We're happy.
Getting this methodology can work very well with families also.
Uh-huh.
Mm. Family dynamics with children. So
absolutely.
If there's any decisions to be made about the family, everybody should have their input.
That's right.
So that everybody should be accountable for what they recommend.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
That's absolutely right. And that's how it works. And the nice thing about this is for the pastor here, he doesn't get blamed for everything that happens now. The nice thing about it is he gets a break, you know, and people meet him in the hall and say, thanks, pastor, you know, and he's going, sure. And he didn't do anything. It was his groups that did it for him. And it really helps out a lot. It makes for a great relationship. But thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
We did pass out evaluation forms. It's up to you if you want to do that. They're asking us to pass those out for feedback.
And they want me to ask you one little thing. They look like this. They're on the chair behind me. Or they were. And basically, there's one little question on there. It says, what other related topics to this subject would you like to see addressed in the future? They said, nobody ever fills that one out. If you can think of anything, we can be heroes. And put those on these little things, and we have to turn those in.
And we did bring, we're part of a 501c3 called Netifer. Mm-hmm. We're really a discipleship ministry.
Yeah.
James is also qualified and educated to do this adult education. So we just wanted you to know who we are, too. We do have a book that we co-wrote together. It's at the author's table. It's called Saving the Saved.
Mm-hmm.
That's done really well, too, and we'd love to share that with you.
And that has a lot of things in it that talks about our country and what's going on in our churches.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of research. We have about 350,000 churches in America. Mm-hmm. And only about half of that amount are really seriously trying to do what you're trying to do. A lot of them are going off the deep end with all kinds of crazy things and ideas and things like that. And this is not a good time for the church. We want the church to grow, and we want it to do well. But not every church can be like Redwood or Three Crosses or something like that. It's very hard, and it takes work, and people need to know about techniques that work and things that work with adults. Whenever you consider adults and adult education information, it always makes your job a lot easier, you know. If I expect that every one of you are going to come up in this meeting and say, oh, you know, we tried that before, that never did work. If I know that that's what you're going to do ahead of time, I'm willing to say, well, you could be right, you know, but let's talk about it. Mm-hmm. See, as opposed to, well, geez, I can't believe we got hurt in this group, you know, that's the wrong thing. What that tells me is they have no knowledge of adult education, you know, what's going on. Oh, we're adults, and this is just the way we behave.
Right.
We're not always nice as we should be. You know? Okay.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you so much.
It's
we
good
really
to talk
it.
To you.
Yeah, it is.
Workshop.